West Africa, the island of Bioko, Equatorial Guinea. Wednesday, June 2nd, 4:30 p.m. Nicholas Martin knew they were being watched, but by whom or how many, there was no way to tell. He glanced at Father Willie Dorn, his walking companion, as if for an answer, but the tall, razor-thin, 78-year-old German-born priest said nothing. They kept on, ducking through overgrowth, crossing narrow, fast-running streams, following a dense, nearly invisible trail that snaked through the rainforest. Now, the track turned upward and they climbed higher. It was hot, easily 100 degrees, maybe more. The humidity made it seem worse. Martin wiped sweat from his neck and forehead, then swatted at the cloud of mosquitoes that had haunted them from the start. Every piece of clothing stuck to him. The stench of plant life was overwhelming, like an intense perfume from which there was no escape. The sharp cries of tropical birds rang through the leafy, sun-blocking canopy above, far louder and more shrill than he imagined any natural sound could be. Still, Father Willie, Willie, as he'd asked to be called, said nothing. Just continued on, walking a trail he plainly knew so well from his half-century on the island that his feet seemed to make all the decisions. Finally, he spoke.
"I don't know you at all, Mr. Martin," he said without looking at him.
Spanish was the official language of Equatorial Guinea, but he used English when talking to Martin.
"Soon I will have to decide if I can trust you. I hope you understand."
"I understand," Martin said, and they hiked on. Minutes passed, and then he heard a low, rumbling sound he couldn't place. Little by little it intensified, drowning out the sounds of the birds and becoming very nearly a roar. Then he knew. Waterfalls. In the next seconds, they rounded a bend in the trail and stopped before a cascade of falls that thundered past them in a rising mist to disappear into the jungle 1,000 feet below. Willie stared at the spectacle for a long moment, then slowly turned to Martin.
"My brother told me you were coming, to expect you," he said over the roar of the water. "Yet he has never met you, never talked with you. So whether you are the man he told me about or someone else who has taken his place, I have no way to know."
"All I can tell you," Martin said, "is that I was asked to come to see you, to listen to what you have to say and then to go home. I know very little more than that except that you think there's trouble here." The priest studied him carefully, still unsure of him.
"Where is this home?
A city in the north of England."
"You are American."
"Was. I'm an expat. I carry a British passport."
"You are a reporter."
"A landscape architect."
"Then why you?"
"A friend, who indirectly knows your brother, asked me to come."
"What friend?"
"Another American."
"He is a reporter?"
"You can trust me," Martin said, and then looked around. They seemed wholly alone, yet Martin had the sense they were being watched.
"They have gone," Willie said quietly. "Fang tribesmen. Good friends. They followed us for a time until I assured them I was all right. They will make certain no one else comes."
Abruptly, he reached inside his priest's frock and took out a letter-sized envelope. He flicked it open and slid out several folded pages and held them unopened in his hand.
"What do you know of Equatorial Guinea?"
"Not much, just what I read on the plane. It's a small, very poor country run by a dictator president named Francisco Tiombe. In the last decade, oil was discovered and..."
"Francisco Tiombe," Willie cut him off angrily, "is the head of a brutal, ruthless family who considers themselves royal but are not. Tiombe killed the former president, his own cousin, in order to gain power and reap the riches from oil leases. And rich he is, enormously rich. He recently bought a mansion in California for $40 million, and that is only one of a half dozen he has around the world. The trouble is, he has chosen not to share that wealth with the masses who remain poorer than poor."
Willie's passion grew deeper.
Willie's eyes bore into Martin. People are angry. Violence has flared often and is getting worse. Government troops react to it with savage, repeated, unspeakable cruelty. So far, it has been limited to the mainland, and nothing has yet happened in Bioko. But fear is in the air everywhere, and people are certain it will soon spread here. At the same time, there has been a large influx of oil workers. Most are from an American company called A.G. Stryker. It is as if something big is happening or is about to happen, but no one knows what it is. Because of the violence, Stryker has brought in mercenary soldiers from a private military company known as Simcoe to protect its people and facilities.